The world is run by the man.
Who?
The man. Oh, you don't know the man? Oh, well, he's everywhere.
A lot of women are turned on by a masculine, earthy quality.
Whatever you do, don't tell her you don't drink. She'll think you're a boy scout.
What kind of man are you? What kind of man are you?
That's just one of the questions we've asked this summer while exploring the definition of masculinity. Today, the subject is food and the notion that real men eat meat. According to advertisers, they crave steak and burgers. Here's a Burger King commercial from just a few years ago.
I am man, hear me roar. The number's too big to ignore. And I'm way too hungry to settle for chick food.
Chick food, meaning foods that are marketed almost exclusively to women. Salad, yogurt, cupcakes. Well, it's not just Madison Avenue. NPR's Netta Ulaby has a look at how men are stereotyped by what they like to eat.
The guests at this barbecue in Brooklyn are a bunch of really manly guys.
Round two, gentlemen.
Semi-professional athletes, mostly, and seriously built.
Do any of you guys have, like, competitions or races or anything coming up, or fights?
I do.
These guys all share something else in common besides feats of strength.
My name is Giacomo Marchesi. My path to veganism was actually based on performance. I am a bodybuilder.
I'm Dominic Thompson. I am a triathlete, and I'm a vegan. I'm proud of it.
These manly, muscly men do not consume any animal products. No meat, fish, dairy, eggs, ever. And for that, they get teased, even sometimes mocked.
You had a vegan women in the community that don't have the same pushback.
Thompson says veganism tends to get associated with wimpy female stereotypes.
Everyone always thinks vegans are weak, skinny, frail, pale. I get people that think you like Gwyneth Paltrow.
Who, by the way, is no longer vegan. Also unlike Gwyneth Paltrow, Thompson grew up in a rough Chicago housing project. The kind of kid who, when he saw people picking on stray dogs or cats, would rush in to save them.
It's nothing more cowardly to me, taking advantage of something that's defenseless.
Today, he's the guy who checks labels to avoid leather, wool, and products tested on animals.
To me, compassion is the new cool.
Let's meet the host of this all-male vegan barbecue. Tall, elegant Joshua Catcher runs a website called The Discerning Brute. It's a lifestyle guide for vegan men. Catcher also designs very expensive vegan menswear. It's caught the attention of men's magazines like GQ and Esquire. But Catcher challenges society's prevailing notions of manhood.
Mainstream masculinity is a roadblock to sustainability.
Catcher thinks in an era of climate change and environmental destruction, masculinity should be reframed as protecting the planet, not dominating it. Since he stopped eating or using products that hurt animals, he says he's been made to feel unmanly.
Absolutely. It's considered just a sign of weakness to other men, like, oh, you've left the club.
There's actually been a tradition of leaving the club that dates back in this country for more than 100 years, says Pomona College professor Kila Wazana Tompkins.
One particular group of radical food thinkers advocated a kind of manliness based on vegetarianism.
Including Sylvester Graham, after whom the graham crackers named, and Bronson Alcott, father of Louisa May Alcott, who wrote Little Women. He was vegan, and for him that was part of his advocacy against slavery and for women's rights. Although according to his daughter, Alcott never bothered to do any cooking. Professor Tompkins is, like me, a meat eater, but she finds something very masculine about following a vegan diet.
It's a total control, right, of the body.
There's something hardcore about veganism that appeals to a certain type of guy. According to a recent Harris poll, more women are vegetarian than men, but more men are vegan. John Joseph of the punk band The Cro-Mags has been vegan for more than 30 years. Joseph's also written a book called Meat is for, well, we have to say, wussies. The real title's too hardcore for public radio.
You know, I come from jails and gyms where, you know, guys were eating Alpo burgers because the dudes were like, if it's good enough for my pit bull, it's going to give me more strength and energy.
Back in Brooklyn, the Grillmeister is not flipping Alpo burgers.
So these are our beet burgers.
That's right, beets, for their pleasingly pinkish color, says Dan Strong. He's a professional vegan chef who trained in some fancy New York kitchens.
I was mostly a butcher.
but strong, met a beautiful vegan at the restaurant where he worked and converted to impress her. Because he went hardcore vegan without a mushy, transitional vegetarian phase, where he still got to eat eggs and dairy, Strong gained grudging respect, he says, from the other meat cutters and macho chefs.
I actually got made fun of more about the fact that I didn't have tattoos.
Being vegan has made Strong think a lot about how American men are not encouraged to show feelings. Caring passionately and openly about animals and the planet is for him a powerful expression of manhood.
I mean, there's an illusion that manhood is like this confidence that is exuded at all times. Veganism is that kind of confidence. It really is. It's a choice that we make consciously, that we live actively, that guides us in our lives. I can't think of anything really more manly than that.
As the barbecue winds down, the men have decided to pursue maybe the ultimate in masculinity, hunting.
I don't know if you guys are into wild foraged mushrooms, but I'm all about going out there and picking up.
They don't stand a chance.
From the new frontier of food and masculinity, this is Netta Ulibi, NPR News.
It is the season of state fairs, a chance to expand your palate or test your gag reflex.
If it can be batter dipped or put on a stick, someone is thinking about how to sell it on a fairground.
And the combinations seem to get more elaborate and more outrageous every year.
So our producers were inspired to put our state fair food senses to the test to see if our gut instincts could help us distinguish between what's actually being served and some faux fair foods. So, Robert, we both have lists here. I guess, fire away.
Okay, Audie. The California State Fair is underway now. Which of these items is real? First, double-fried honey cicadas presented on a leaf-shaped funnel cake. The second, a cheeseburger stuffed with macaroni and cheese on a crispy cream bun. And your final choice, a sriracha-flavored jumbo gummy worm on a stick, of course.
Can't go wrong with sriracha, I think, right? That's kind of a trend now.
I'm sorry. The correct answer is a cheeseburger stuffed with macaroni and cheese.
Of course.
On a Krispy Kreme bun.
Of course. Okay, Robert, your turn.
Okay.
At the Indiana State Fair, which of these items will actually be served next month? A hot beef sundae. It's layered with mashed potatoes, marinated beef, gravy, cheese, corn, sprinkles, and a cherry tomato. Number two, vegan surprise, a tofu and kale salad with a hidden cube of calf liver inside. Mm. And finally, beer-battered turkey drumsticks drizzled with fudge.
I'm going to go with the beef item.
That is the correct answer.
Sounded like an Indiana menu to me. Now, let's try one more. In Minnesota, fairgoers can enjoy which of the following treats in late August? First, grilled rattlesnake on a stick. The skin is peeled off, but available separately, toasted. Your next choice, dessert walleye, dusted with cinnamon sugar, fried, and paired with a Jell-O salad. Or dessert salami, chocolate, butter, almonds, and walnuts rolled into a distinctive salami shape.
Oh, I hear butter and I think fairgrounds. Is that the real one?
In the dessert salami, you're absolutely right. That will be served at the Minnesota State Fair.
All right, we're out of time, but I did want to give a shout out to the Wisconsin State Fair, which begins later this month. It will be serving battered Cajun shark on a stick, served, Robert, with a special Cajun ranch sauce.
They know how to do it in Wisconsin. Well, thanks for playing along and bon appetit.
And now the game where we like to ask people who do amazing things to try their hand at something rather mundane. 20 years ago exactly, Chef Thomas Keller bought a little restaurant in Napa, California called the French Laundry and transformed it into the finest restaurant in the country. He's inspired countless other chefs. He consulted on the film Ratatouille. He opened other award-winning restaurants and convinced people to pay $100 for a corn pudding appetizer.
Ooh.
Thomas Keller, welcome to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Good to be here, thank you.
But wait.
We have something for you. But there you go.
Wow.
So, oh, man.
Now, he,
for the folks at home, the entire audience is getting food.
Taking one of these. Yeah. So...
out with one loaf and one fish, and look at this.
Yeah. So
amazing.
While we're getting everything handed out to the panelists, what do we have here?
You are holding the coronet of Atlantic salmon.
Yeah.
With creme fraiche and sweet onions, sweet red onions inside.
Right. And so
basically what it is,
yes,
for all intents and purposes, it's a cracker with sour cream and salmon.
Right. And I should say,
there you go.
That what this looks like is a tiny little ice cream cone.
Can I get Jimmy's on this?
Yeah.
What?
It's awfully good.
It's okay?
Oh, my God.
Does it taste like what I just described?
Yeah.
A cracker with sour cream and salmon, right?
And salmon. It's delightful.
Yeah.
I have to say, though, like, they're really tiny.
Mm-hmm. And my...
Okay, but this is actually a great way. Thank you, by the way, for bringing
out
this
food. Oh, you're welcome. A little refreshment. You guys needed something to think
about. Well, we did.
We're starting to die down a little bit.
I know. It's getting a little... We're flagging. I'm sure with food, with a morsel of food that big, we can go another 4 or 5 minutes. I have a couple questions for you. First of all, is that something you serve at your restaurant?
We serve it to every guest that comes to our restaurant, yes.
And really?
We have served it to every guest that comes to the restaurant for the past 20 years.
Ooh. Really?
Yes. And if you add per se to that, that's 11 years. So that's 31 years of serving the coronet.
Per se is your award-winning restaurant in New York?
In New York, correct.
Right, okay. Yep. Mm-hmm. Now, I want to, because this is actually wonderful, even though the audience couldn't see or...
I'm sorry.
I pity them, taste it.
Mm. Right.
Is this, would you say, typical of your approach to food? It is basically a little ice cream cone made of salmon,
yes,
cream, cracker. You even made little chive jimmies.
Good.
And this is all to make a tiny little bite of food. And we're not even to the stuff you charge people for.
But it's one of the most important parts of the meal.
Why?
And why?
Why?
I knew you were going to ask why. Because it's a way of opening up. Somebody comes in the restaurant. They're in the French Laundry or they're at Per Se. And, you know, and sometimes those kind of restaurants can be a little intimidating, right?
Right. Mm-hmm.
And so we want to kind of break the ice.
Right.
And what better way to break the ice than give them something that looks like an ice cream cone?
Yeah.
If you don't smile at that, then you have no sense of humor whatsoever.
Yeah.
Right? And so not only does it make them smile, right, breaks down that intimidation, but then they eat it. And because it has reference points, because it tastes like something they've had before, a cracker with sour cream and salmon, they like it.
I want to back up a little bit. So you bought this restaurant. It was an pre-existing restaurant, the French Laundry.
Correct.
In Napa, California, about 20 years ago.
That's right.
And at that time, I'm sure it was more of a traditional restaurant. You ordered some food. The food came. You ate it. You left. But you brought this approach to food where it's more of a theatrical production. You go in and, if I understand correctly, you pay a lot of money, but it's fixed what it is. And you just bring out a succession of dishes.
Correct.
And each of them are like that. They're brilliant little composed, extraordinary
sculptural things. We try to base our food on the law of diminishing return, right?
Okay.
The more you have of something, the less you like it. So we want to give you just enough that when you've had that last bite, you go, God, I wish I had a little more.
Mm,
And then you say, no, you can't have any more. You go, right? And
really?
And then we bring out the next dish, because at that moment when you've had that last bite and you say you want a little more,
mm-hmm,
that's the moment when it's been a perfect
mm-hmm
experience with that food.
Right.
Right?
Mm.
And then the next dish comes out and we hope to achieve the same thing. So by the time you've gone through these 10, 11, 12, or 13 courses, of course your appetite has been satisfied. You've had a great experience over a three and a half hour period, depending on how many people you're with. So the one thing I always recommend is come to the French Laundry or Per Se with somebody you like.
Yeah.
Because if you come with somebody you don't like, you're going to be in big trouble.
Because you're spending a lot of time with them.
Yeah.
So aren't you inviting people to spend hundreds of dollars to come in, spend hours getting just tiny bites of things that leave them just wanting a little bit more? Mm-hmm. And you work so hard at this, aren't you approaching your ideal of getting people to come spend all day, give you thousands of dollars, and get nothing? And leave happy.
You said that people are sometimes intimidated when they come. What was the most intimidated that you've ever been in serving someone?
You know, I think we got a little nervous when Julia Child walked in, and she walked in the back door and into the kitchen and walked over to the chef de partie on the meat and wanted to know what he was doing, and she kind of cruised around the kitchen. But after you get to know them, and you know, they just want to have good food.
Did you eventually get locks for that back door?
Why do you call it the French Laundry?
I didn't call it the French Laundry. I bought the restaurant. It was opened in 1977, and it was called the building was called the French Laundry because actually there was a French Laundry there at one time in its history, and so it just stayed.
Right.
So wait, the French were washing their clothes?
Well, you know,
I once heard an interview with Steven Spielberg where he said whenever he sees somebody else's movie, he has to sit there with a stone face because if he grimaces or looks bored, everybody will be talking about, oh my God, Steven Spielberg doesn't like it.
Sure.
Have you ever been in a restaurant or at a friend's house for a meal and it's been awful? And you say to yourself, I cannot say a word, I cannot indicate anything, I have to clean my plate, because otherwise people will talk about how Thomas Keller didn't like it.
Yes.
And what do you...
But not in somebody's home. Not in somebody's home. Not, you know, not, because most people always typically cook something that they're comfortable with.
Right.
You know? And if they're comfortable with it, they usually do a good job. Mm. When you go out to dinner sometimes to some young chefs, you know, and they want to impress you, right? I mean, you're Thomas Keller or... They're coming to the restaurant. They want to make sure that they, you know, pull out all the stops. And sometimes it can be a little bit problematic. You know, sometimes the portions are a little bit too big, and you know, you've had 20 of them, and it's like, you know, okay.
Have you ever like put food in your napkin and hit it? Have you ever like put your head back and tried to swallow like a bird getting down a big bug?
No, it's never been quite that bad.
Okay,
it's never been quite that.
I'm glad to hear.
Yes,
and we're free Thursday if you want to come over. Thomas Keller, we are delighted you're here, not just because you brought us food, but Thomas Keller, we have invited you here to play a game we're calling...
Light starch on hangers, please, and I'll need it Wednesday.
You've done pretty well running this business called the French Laundry, but how many clothes have you cleaned? That's what we figured. Very few. So, we're going to ask you three questions about actual laundries. Get two correct, you'll win our prize for one of our listeners, Carl's voice on their home voicemail. Bill, who is Chef Keller playing for?
Amanda Peck of San Francisco, California.
You ready to play, Chef?
I'm ready.
All right, here's your first question. Sometimes it's a good idea to not launder your clothes. Do not launder your clothes so you can make use of which of these? A, the brief safe, a place to store your cash and valuables that looks like a pair of dirty underwear so no burglar would ever touch it. B, the CIA headquarters new entry system identifies you by swabbing your shirt for your unique BO or stink print. Or C, you want to wear a Banana Republic's new American Oxford. It comes pre-stained with barbecue sauce, so you can't ruin it. One of these exists.
I would say A.
You're going to go A, the brief safe?
The brief safe.
You are correct. You can buy this thing. We looked at a picture of this on the internet. It is fail-safe. Nobody will ever touch this if it's sitting on your floor. That's very good. Laundromats can be exciting places. Which of these is a real headline from the Montana Standard back in 2005? A, Klan leader fails to separate, announces pink robes are in this year. B, leprechaun robs Front Street Laundry. C, man trapped in laundry machine says, quote, it wasn't bad until the spin cycle.
Mm. So you have the spin cycle, you have the leprechaun, and you have the Klan member.
Right. It was an actual headline in the Montana Standard
A.
from Butte. You're going to go for A, Klan leader?
Yeah.
No, it was actually the leprechaun. Ooh. This is on St. Patrick's Day. The robber was wearing a fake black beard, mustache, black plastic derby hat, and green kilt. Said the clerk in Butte, Montana, Butte gets pretty crazy on St. Patrick's Day. All right. We have three courses. We've had two.
Okay.
You have one to go if you get this one right. Win our prize. Some people really, really, really care about their laundry, as in which of these cases? A, at the end of each week of filming, the cast of the film Captain America all washed their own costumes on star Chris Evans' washboard abs. B, Lady Gaga created her own mesquite seven-spice detergent formula for washing her meat dress. Or C, First Lady Bess Truman insisted on mailing her clothes back to Kansas City from Washington for washing.
Mm-hmm. I would say C.
You do it for C, Bess Truman?
I'll go for C. Yeah.
This is true. Bill, how did Thomas Keller do on our quiz?
He got 2 out of 3. That's a winner in my book.
Thomas Keller is a chef restaurateur, the author of many cookbooks. You can eat his food at the French Laundry near San Francisco and Per Se in New York or also in Las Vegas, but good luck getting a reservation. Mm-hmm. Thomas Keller, thank you so much for joining us. What a pleasure to talk to you, Chef. Chef Keller, ladies and gentlemen.
Well, I am here to say to you that I love my bread and my meat. Take a look at me and you can plainly see that I'm a man.
who loves to eat.
I'm Kiana Farkash from Colorado, and I made grilled salmon with a Swiss chard salad and farro.
And what was your inspiration?
I love grilled salmon. I love any grilled treat, and grilled salmon is my favorite grilled treat. So I did that, and I like the colors of Swiss chard salad. I like the colors of any salad, because I added red bell pepper and carrot to make it more colorful. And I like the nuttiness of the farro.